with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's number 521, November the 29th, 1981. I didn't mention last week, because I was doing the broadcast on Otto von Bolschwang, the anniversary of the Jonestown deaths, the many deaths that took place there. There are a group of people who listen to these tapes and are very interested in the Jonestown exposures and trying to get the truth out about how 912 people died down there, and also where are the missing 130, 140 people that turned these bodies over and injected some in the back and shot some trying to escape. There's a group in Philadelphia that is investigating this, and they had a meeting at the federal building on the anniversary of the Jonestown deaths, and it did make the wire services back there, and they met other people. There was also a meeting in Harlem in New York, and they went to that one. I did mention on KLRB last week the five or six researchers that were in Dallas at the site where John Kennedy was murdered, and that also made the wire services, the UPI and Associated Press. And then up in Oakland, California, there were a handful of people who were at the gravesite of over 200 children in a mass unmarked grave. They were remembering the Jonestown deaths. So in all, maybe there were 15 people in one city in New York or Philadelphia, another 15 in Oakland, and five or six in Dallas, remembering these terrible tragedies. And it's a shame out of a country of 220, 230 million people that a handful of people can remember these events, keep studying them through the years, collecting information, and make the wire services and call attention to the fact that at least somebody cares and somebody is doing something about it. Next week will be the anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. And depending how the news breaks, I may do one whole hour on the update of the Lennon murder and the links to Edwin Wilson, Frank Turpel, Senator Strom Thurmond, and the gang that were out to murder John Lennon just before Ronald Reagan took office to prohibit demonstrations and anti-war meetings because this administration had full intention of escalating to the brink of war. And the kind of anti-nuclear demonstrations in Europe are the things that this administration has feared and does not want in this country, and the one sure way of assembling a million people within 12 hours' notice would be the reunion of the Beatles. I'll do more on that next week. I got a letter from a friend in Texas who keeps track of what's going on inside the Pentagon and has some inside information, he says, with people in the Pentagon and has for years, and he said that these broadcasts are causing quite a bit of consternation back there, and he doesn't have the tapes, but he said the one broadcast that was upsetting them was tape number 515, that he got word that Mae Brussel was stirring a lot of trouble back there and that they were concerned and making note of it. I looked up broadcast 515. One half of that broadcast was on the Egyptian scandal that Jack Anderson had in 900 papers around the country, the suspicious contract and the handling of weapons that were supposed to go for Sadat that were going to the PLO, 50% of them, and arming the people who were on the right and left of Anwar Sadat when he was murdered, when he received those 28 bullets. And Mr. Ghazala and Mubarak's brother-in-law, those relatives that were in on the planning of shipping the weapons to the enemies of Sadat were on either side. I don't think that would cause them that much consternation because, as I say, Jack Anderson has had it in every paper, 900 papers daily. He had this same story. In fact, I got it from him. But the one piece of information on tape 515, which Jack Anderson and no other researcher in the country has had, is the Greek connection, and I think that's probably what is getting into their craw, because it's terribly important. This is the mentioning of our station chief of the CIA, Richard Welch, who was in Athens and who was murdered, and the CIA has used that example of Philip Agee and various researchers putting information about the crimes of the CIA out as an excuse to stop free journalism and exposure of their murders and their crimes. And they say you can't name CIA agents because then they will be killed by Richard Welch. And it was that broadcast it was September 18th of this year, on the links of the CIA to sacrificing Richard Welch and, again, Frank Turpel over in Cyprus and in Greece, and the links of Turpel to Richard Helms in Iran, and the network I did on the purposely killing Richard Welch in order to stifle the dissent of people like myself and others around the country who are exposing these crimes. If you want that particular tape, it's tape number 515 if you want to order that cassette. Ronald Reagan's administration is never dull. Going back one more thing to the Pentagon information that he had that they're concerned about this, that may account for the reason that E. Howard Hunt and approximately 20 other agents with him were on the airplane coming up here on my airplane from Los Angeles to Monterey. That was Friday, November the 13th. I mentioned that E. Howard Hunt was on that plane, the old Watergate spook who worked closely with Richard Helms and Frank Turpel and all the people that I've been talking about every week. I don't think it's any coincidence that we met eye to eye and smiled, and both of us knew each other at the airport when we got off the plane. I didn't realize he was there flying, or I would have been scared to death. I think I would have, really. Getting back now to Ronald Reagan. When Reagan is in power, the 8 years as governor of this state, and now as president of the United States, things are never dull. They begin to take an aggressive stand. Reagan did in California when he was governor, and then his aggression brought a counter-reaction, and the counter-reaction brings exposures of the team. And now that Ronald Reagan is president, he has a terrible dilemma. He all of a sudden discovered, as he said, that he thinks Washington, D.C. is one big ear, and he's in a lot of trouble. I'm just going to mention two of the areas this evening, go into detail, and the others I'll do at another time. One has to do with Richard F. Carey. He was arrested. He's a partner of Michael Reagan, and I think this is a marvelous story. Richard Carey is in Los Angeles, and he's been indicted on a $370,000 fraud. And I'll want to go into that because I personally know something about that story, and that involves the son of Ronald Reagan, the president. And then, of course, there's Richard Allen, who this evening resigned from the National Security Agency. When he resigns, we get an admiral in, and remember Eisenhower said, beware of the military-industrial. So out goes Richard Allen, who has worked for the CIA, the Defense Department, and the admiral takes his place. But anyway, Richard Allen is out, and we'll go into that at some length. William Casey is still in trouble. Jack Anderson is writing articles about his business associations and Olympic Games bodybuilding center that he was supposed to develop as a franchise of the Olympic Games, and that he uses computers from a company called Data General, which is under investigation by the FBI. And, of course, Casey's holdings as a lawyer representing South Korea and Indonesia and the Superior Oil Company in the Persian Gulf are bringing a lot of flack because he makes decisions as a CIA director in the Persian Gulf, and he owns money and stocks, and he refuses to put them in blind trust. I don't know how that works anyway. Henry Kissinger was working for Chase Manhattan when he was National Security Advisor, but he absolutely outright will not put his holdings in blind trust while he makes decisions for the CIA to move in countries where he has investments, and the investments can either go up or down. And then the Washington Post and other newspapers are still covering stories on the Stockman story, and there was one large story in the Houston Post about his being a bad example, David Stockman, that he never paid back his loans until recently from Harvard Divinity School and from Michigan, where he was going to school. It took 13 years. And in February 1981, the Boston Globe exposed the fact that he hasn't paid back his school debts, which isn't very good when he's telling us how to live and tighten the belt. And the Atlantic Monthly, December 81, is on the stand, and I bought that with the story of the lousy budget. Now, Loyal Davis is under some investigation. That's Nancy Reagan's stepfather. He was involved with the Department of Health and Human Services, and there was a long story in the Washington Post and other papers this past week. White House pressure on the FDA is investigated. Preliminary inquiries into allegations that the White House may have exerted pressure to get federal approval for a new surgical suture. Nancy Reagan's stepdad, Loyal Davis, is a retired doctor but has investments and has represented Johnson & Johnson Company from Brunswick, New Jersey. And he pushed through with evidently with some telephone calls, some equipment, surgical equipment that would enhance Johnson & Johnson. And Ralph Nader's group is investigating through a public interest organization that this suture was not approved, and they disregarded a request to investigate it further and do further testing. But the Johnson & Johnson was given the go-ahead by the Drug Administration, and the call came from the White House. And it benefited Loyal Davis, that's Nancy Reagan's stepdad. So she's a little mad about that. And then, of course, their buddy Frank Sinatra was active in Caesar's World. He put on the inaugural ball for Ronald Reagan and had a gang of their mob friends there, of course. And then as soon as the inaugural ball was over and they were indebted to him for that lovely party, he got his license for Caesar's World, for Caesar's Palace, and was back into the Nevada and hopefully the New Jersey gambling group. Now, this last week, the vice president of Caesar's World, Caesar's Palace Casino, was arrested in Australia taking money out of Australia, smuggling more than $100,000 in cash. He was caught at the airport. He's the vice president for Caesar's World. And also they're demanding that the Caesars World founder be removed because of his links to organized crime. Another article in the paper this past week for the New York Times. The casino has been barred from New Jersey because Clifford J. Perlman, who is official of Caesars World, has links to organized crime. At the time that Sinatra wanted a piece of the action of Caesars World, he was denied that for a long time, 17 years ago, because of his links with Sam Giancana and the Westchester Premier Theater in New York and allegations that he took $2 million to Lucky Luciano on a trip to Cuba, endless links to organized crime. And, of course, as soon as Ronald Reagan was in the White House, Sinatra put on the ball for him and then got back in with his part of the action of Caesar's World. And now the vice president was just arrested down in Australia with, that's a little bit of money for these people, $100,000, but it's still pretty funny. And, of course, Mr. Casey, the CIA director, I mentioned on a tape this last August, among his clients, besides South Korea and the Saudi Arabian lines and so forth, is Caesar's World, the gambling palace, and that's linked to organized crime. And Mr. Casey, of course, has a long history with Robert Vesco and the crime syndicate. So Ronald Reagan is having a lot of hard times close in on him, but he deserves them because it's very hard to guess when people like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan or Gerald Ford or Jimmy Carter would come down. They have so many links to past political assassinations, to organized crime syndicate, to the mob, that it's only a matter of when they'll be brought out or exposed at some levels. Not how, but when. Because it's impossible with the cost of payoffs to keep people quiet today. Even inflation touches the payoffs, and I don't think they can keep up the payments. An article this morning in the San Jose Mercury and also in the New York Times, front page story, outsiders dig deep for Ronald Reagan. $10 million raised by independent groups. Now, these are groups outside the Republican Party. Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan each had $29.4 million from the United States Treasury, each of them. Can you imagine $58 million for an election? It's such a ripoff in this country because both of them are such crooks. Can you imagine taking out of our pockets $58 million for the election? Then that's from the Treasury, and then the political parties put up money for these people. The political action committees put up money. And then Ronald Reagan pulls in an extra $10 million from independent groups because before a certain date is set for contributions or spending limit, he got the $10 million. Well, that was this morning's paper. And if you saw this evening's 60 Minutes, many of you watched that, there was a very interesting man, Y.K. Powell. Sir Y.K. Powell was on 60 Minutes. And a while back, I think it was tape 480, I talked about Mr. Powell, Maxine Cheshire, who I miss very much, the columnist from the Washington Post, who is now retired from there. And she wrote the best articles I've seen of any single person consistently. She had an article on Henry Kissinger coming to the inauguration of Ronald Reagan and putting up money, loaning money to Ronald Reagan for the inaugural committee officials. It was somewhere, they said, between $5,000 to $50,000 to help underwrite the festivities. And this billionaire from Hong Kong, this shipbuilder and owner who owns all of Hong Kong, newspapers, hotels, airlines, and so forth, was on 60 Minutes, the richest man in the world. And he was the guest of Henry Kissinger, who visits him down in Hong Kong, and he owns the Worldwide Marine Incorporation, many other corporations. But he's also a part of a chairmanship of Chase Manhattan Bank on the advisory committee. They don't tell you that on 60 Minutes. They had a picture of Henry Kissinger and Katharine Graham with him and so forth. He has important connections all over the world and is on the board of a special committee with Chase Manhattan. This is the richest man in the world, who was one of the people who, in quotes, loaned $50,000. Now, if $10 million was raised for Ronald Reagan outside, we don't know if this richest man in the world, who's with Chase Manhattan and Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig, loaned it or gave it or what they gave under the table. But the same day that the article was out about the $10 million extra for Ronald Reagan, this gentleman was on 60 Minutes, and you got a good view of him, I hope, if you watched that this evening. And then tying Hong Kong into my favorite subject, the Nguyen Han Bank, there was an article in Jonathan Miller's newsletter. Neil Evans, former representative of the Nguyen Han Bank in Chiang Mai, northern Thailand's drug smuggling center. And Nguyen Han is the bank in Australia that folded. For those of you who are not familiar with this program, Frank Nguyen was murdered in January of 1979, and Michael Han is very busy and politically active. And this is the bank that represented what I call the kill money. It was the CIA assassination money, the narcotics money, the secret team's source of funding for activities all over the world in every major city. And I believe, of course, that they're still active. The $55 million to $1 billion that was missing when the bank folded at the beginning of 1979 has never been seen or claimed, and it was CIA money. And there was an article that came out of Australia. Neil Evans, former representative of the Nguyen Han Bank in Chiang Mai, northern Thailand's drug smuggling center, told Australian TV that Michael Han, and he's still alive, announced at a meeting of bank leaders in 1977 in Hong Kong that the Nguyen Han Bank just got the CIA's account and would be laundering millions of dollars for the agency. Evans had set up the Chiang Mai branch in 1977 to take deposits from drug traffickers whose money he moved as a courier out of Thailand. And, of course, this money goes all over the world, and it's tied in to Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson and George Corcoran and the CIA and William Colby of the CIA. And then Colby went on to become a lobbyist for corporations in Japan, and the Nguyen Han has large corporations in Japan, and that, of course, leads to Richard Allen, I'll get to in a minute. But this money in Hong Kong, the meetings in Hong Kong at the bank, and with Michael Han and the CIA money and Mr. Pao, the great leader of Hong Kong, the man who owns practically the whole city, with the inaugural committee, just fits right in with the activities and the sources of funding that Ronald Reagan was getting and enjoying, but I think he's enjoying it less all of the time. Now, one other item before I get, or several quick ones before I get to Richard Allen. The Jackal is reportedly working in Syria. Carlos, the Venezuelan terrorist known as the Jackal, is back working in Syria. Now, that's very important because Carlos has worked with Edwin Wilson and Samuel Cummings and George Corcoran and Frank Turple. And Jack Anderson was on Larry King's show this week on the radio, and he was asked about Corcoran and Turple, and he said that after they were on 60 Minutes, they were indeed kidnapped. Now, Edwin Wilson may have offered them up. He suggested that Edwin Wilson was behind it, and Wilson works with Carlos the Jackal. And it may be that part of Wilson's immunity, he's been meeting with federal officials, bargaining for immunity if he turns in certain people. And it'll be interesting to see if Turple and Corcoran are alive or if the Jackal had to do in one of their own friends because he talked too much on 60 Minutes. They both talked too much. I was amazed at what they said. And the men were in Syria And they have been, or they were in Lebanon, they were kidnapped by people from Syria that came and kidnapped them. And Carlos is now running a network of agents in Syria. This comes from the United Press, November the 16th, 1981, that he travels back and forth and is working in sabotage activities. And I think that's very important. The article says that he was recruited after falling out with Libya's Colonel Gaddafi. Well, if he fell out with Gaddafi, he may be willing to bring in Turpel and Korkola and have the Syrians kidnap him, kidnap them for their possible links or their willingness to talk about people that would involve Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and Samuel Cummings in London with bases in Ireland and Monte Carlo. The people at the higher up level will protect themselves, and of course we haven't heard a word. And the minute they were kidnapped, Jeff Gerth stopped articles in the New York Times, the Washington Post. There hasn't been a story about their corrupt links. And that has nothing to do with whether they're alive or dead. At the time that Howard Hughes died, there was a suggestion. Hank Greenspan said out of Vegas, study the organization alive or dead. And the story of Turpel and Wilson and Korkola should continue, whether they're alive or not. But certainly the people writing articles about them and making money off of them should be investigating more about what happened to them and keep that in the news. We don't want that story to fade because it's so important to all the other stories. Now, last week I talked about Otto Albrecht, Alfred von Bolschwang, and I'll be referring to him, I guess, almost every week in the weeks to come. I had 100 copies made of the article from the San Jose Mercury that Pete Carey published in November the 20th, 1981, and I made other explanatory sheets to enclose with it and a copy of an outline of this article that I had on the broadcast last week. I'm sending those five sheets, and I'm sending 100 copies of those to various researchers, writers, people in the news media. I gave one set to a friend from Los Angeles yesterday who was in Carmel, and he was so outraged that he's going to try to raise a fund for me of, I don't know how much money. He said, how much do you need to get new filing cabinets, to get a newsletter going, to be able to get printed sheets to members of Congress, to organizations, to people around this country? And he's going back to L.A. to see if he can raise some money to disseminate this information, because while I reach a lot of people at KLRB and at other radio stations that play these tapes or through subscription to the tape cassettes, there still has to be a way to disseminate information such as this to a wider audience. And so this one friend's response was that we should be doing more, and I hope that he follows through and a lot more people do that. Now, before I get to Richard Allen, I want to mention this story of Michael Regan. I enjoy it so much because, for personal reasons, when I was in Los Angeles, I went down there several years ago to make that movie, The Howard Hughes Mystery. Some of you might remember that episode. We shot that, and I played myself an investigator, and we did the scenes. And then when it was filmed, the part that I had done, and those scenes were cut up and thrown away, and people from the Howard Hughes organization went to the producer and asked him not to remake the film, Manuel Zecina. He's not in Los Angeles anymore, and I don't know where he is. I've lost contact with him. I hope he's okay. He had me come down a second time to refilm that story, and at that time I met Terry Moore, and we were at her home and went out to dinner, and we became instant friends. And then when she was writing a book on her life and her marriage to Howard Hughes, she asked me to come down to Los Angeles and work with her on that book, and that's the time that I met Johnny Meyer by telephone. I've never seen him personally, and got to know him through correspondence and on the phone. And he's the fellow who is under indictment now for a trumped-up murder charge in Los Angeles, and they offered to drop the charges if he would turn over his Howard Hughes papers, and they were grilling him about Mae Bressel. I mentioned that several weeks ago on the air. Well, I got to know Johnny Meyer through Terry Moore. When we finished the book, I helped her with a book and was helping to ghostwrite the book, and it was a good book. I thought it was good. I left and came back to Carmel, and the next thing I knew, there was a secretary who came to retype the book, and she had worked for Ronald Reagan. She used to type up his speeches and work for Reagan in Hollywood, and she took what we had done and completely cut it up. She said, this is terrible, this is terrible. She never published a book or an article herself. She was a secretary. She took his scissors And she cut everything up, and then she put it together to make it look as if Terry Moore were suicidal and mentally sick, and that if Terry were murdered, it would look as if it had been a suicide. And I was outraged at what she did, and they moved in the house with guns, and it was an armed camp, and I have mentioned this in other broadcasts, what took place there. So that Terry was left with literally no book, and what she had was in shreds and not usable for any purpose. And then right after this woman left, a man came and swept Terry off her feet, and he wined her and dined her and probably invested about $2,000 into restaurants and some nice eating places. And he told her that he had money put away in a place, and that if he only had $200,000, he would be able to release the money, which was many millions of dollars. So Terry Moore married him. The poor thing. She married him. She has a beautiful home in Brentwood. And they went to the loan office and turned over $200,000 on the house, on her own house, to this particular person who swept her off her feet. And she, after she married him, 3 days, he disappeared. And he had the cash from the house and just took it away. And all of a sudden, there were payments due, and Richard F. Carey was gone. Now it turns out this last month that Richard Carey was the business partner of Michael Regan, Ronald Regan's son. Now, Paul Lexalt from Utah, who worked with the Howard Hughes organization the whole time that they were buying up Utah, Paul Lexalt was the campaign manager for Ronald Regan. And Terry Moore was writing things about the Hughes organization that Ronald Regan and Paul Lexalt and the Summa Corporation wouldn't want. And the president's son, Michael Regan, is business partners with a man that took that money and took the home away from Terry Moore. Now, Terry is investigating this case. She says she was swindled of $200,000. It was written up in the L.A. Times that he disappeared after the wedding ceremony in May of 79, and he's under indictment of one swindle for $375,000, and he took her home on a loan made to him when he disappeared. So it's interesting that the very man who swindled Terry Moore is a business partner of Michael Regan, and it's a little ironic because of the links of Regan to Paul Lexalt and the Howard Hughes organization, the beginning of Ronald Regan's career, as well as Richard Nixon's with the Hughes organization. So it gets pretty close to home when the president's son is a business partner with a man who's going to bilk Terry Moore, who's trying to tell the story of her life with Howard Hughes and the Hughes organization. And one other article before, before we get to Alan, one quick mention about Litton Industries. Charles Tex Thornton died this last week. He was chairman of Litton Industries. Many of you don't know what that is. That was a corporation that took $43 million off of Hughes Aircraft over an overcharge and started Litton Industries, which became a multinational corporation. He was president of Litton Industries from 1953 to 61. He was born in Texas. He was in the Army, Air Force. He had training books, and then he went to Ford Motor Company and then came out to Hughes Aircraft and as vice president of Hughes Aircraft. Then they took the franchise off those sales and began Litton Industries, which became annual sales of $100 million. Now, Litton Industry was the siphoning off for the Greek military junta at the time that the Nazis and fascists were put back into Greece with Spyro Agnew's friends, Tom Pappas of the CIA with his dual citizenship. And it's ironic that the very week that Charles Tex Thornton dies, that Andreas Papandreou is in Greece, and for the first time they could have rallies this week to celebrate their overthrow of the Greek military junta, and they could assemble on the streets for the first time to celebrate the anniversary of that junta. And it was Charles Tex Thornton and Litton Industry that was the cover for the United States CIA putting that fascism into power in Greece. And so the very day or week that he passes away, Andreas Papandreou is back in office in Greece, and the people are back controlling their own government and away from the CIA. We'll take a break now for 1 minute, and then we'll go to Ronald Regan's problems with the Allen affair and some other articles that are important that fit into this scandalous matter that's going to go much, much further, even though he resigned tonight.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.